The Work Lab podcast from Microsoft answers the questions that keep business leaders up at night. Like, how can I reinvent processes for the AI era, from customer service to sales to HR? How can I prepare for AI to fundamentally transform jobs, companies, industries, and the whole economy? Don't panic. Tune in. Each episode of Work Lab brings you the top experts, hard data, and actionable insights to help you future-proof your organization. Check out Work Lab, that's W-O-R-K-L-A-B, no spaces, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to China Corner Office, a podcast produced in partnership with SubChina, featuring conversations with business leaders from around the world about the challenges and opportunities of doing business in China, the world's most dynamic economy. I'm Chris Marquis, a professor of business at Cornell, where I teach and research on this same topic. Every episode, we talk to an executive at a company doing business in China and explore what has led to their personal and business success, and also some of the challenges they've encountered along the way. With geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and China on the rise, understanding how business can compete in China is more important than ever. If you're interested in doing business in China or are looking for insights to adjust your current business strategy, this is the show for you. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we're talking to Larry Zhang, managing partner at Ching Capital, a pioneering cleantech VC firm in China and globally. Larry is himself a pioneer in this space, having worked at Ching Capital for over 16 years, where he is involved in all aspects of the firm's business, including deal sourcing, execution, and portfolio management. Larry also holds a doctorate from the University of International Business and Economics in Beijing, and is a Harvard Advanced Management Program alumni as well. Larry, welcome to China Corner Office.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Great. Well, I want to dive in sort of starting back a little bit historically, because, you know, like I mentioned, I mean, you guys are such pioneers. You know, back when you got started, I think the idea of an environmental fund, clean tech fund, you know, was really very new and novel. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about how Ching Capital got started, how you got involved in the space and in the firm yourself, because really back in early 2000s, I mean, this was not something many leading investors were doing.
Yeah, you're right. And also fascinating to recall stories. We never believe it. It's already 20 years. So two things I think are very interesting. Ching Capital was founded by Donna Yi, who studied and worked in U.S. for Silicon Valley for over 20 years, roughly before 2000. And at that time, there was a group visit from Tsinghua University in China visiting Silicon Valley. I think there was a very interesting discussion, dialogue between him and also the visiting experts. So he decided to come back to start his own business. And working together with Tsinghua University, particularly the Tsinghua School of Environment. And that's the start of the Ching Capital platform. Personally, myself. After graduation, I worked in, my first work was a telecommunication company. It's technology driven for the 3G technology product development. And it was VC backed. I had a lot of a very good opportunity to discuss with the VC guys sitting on the board of that company. And you know, that's the beginning of my interest in VC. And also, you know, at that time, the most of the VCs are the technology, IT, internet focused. And but, you know, they around 2000, coming to the new century, with development in China economy and also the pollution growing very serious, something easy to see and identify is the air pollution. Air pollution is serious. So sandstorm is one of the phenomena. And we believe with the development of China economy, the government or the nation is more of a ready to expand more resources and its money expenditure to promote the environment sector. So I think that's some of the background story of this start of the Qing Capital and also start my career. And most importantly, Qing Capital can start this VC investment in this clean tech area. One of the key reasons is we found the group of LPs which were willing to support us, including the development banks, national development banks, and also international development banks, family offices, and also multinational companies. We can touch upon this interesting point later on.
Yeah, very interesting. And, you know, you're very modest, I think, in describing. I mean, it seems sort of obvious now, but, you know, who would have thought like 20 years later, President Xi is saying China is going to be carbon neutral and, you know, 50-year plans, last few are so focused on, you know, new energy and the environment. But I'd love to hear, you know, how you helped actually almost build this field in some way in China. And you mentioned the LPs, and I would like to, like you said, get to them in a bit. But I'd like to talk a little bit first about the companies that you were identifying and wanting to invest in. You know, how did you sort of source your deals and convince them that, you know, clean tech was a viable area to focus on?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. I think when the fund established or the establishment of the fund, we have conducted the due diligence, meeting entrepreneurs, and have meetings, attend seminars with the within this sector. You know, the China's so-called clean tech, at that time there was no clean tech word. Just after 2000, 2001, 2002, there's only environment sector or the environment, the energy efficiency sector. And then later on, we had the renewable energy sector. So at the very beginning, so our fund is called China Environment Fund 2002, which means the fund focused on purely focused on environment protection sector. And the vintage year is 2002. And, you know, at the early years of the fund investment, I think we were pushed by the entrepreneurs in this sector. You know, at that time, the environment sector was very, was very shabby. The entrepreneurs are not dressed in the blue suit. They don't speak English. Their offices were in small buildings, very remote areas from the downtown, from the business center. But they were intending to solve the environment problems, to address the pollution issues. So I think that was so fascinating. And at that time also, they were very eager to meet investors. You know, seldomly, there's no social capital who are willing to support them. Yeah, the only resource is government, okay? From the budget, from the government procurement, and there's no the lacked the sufficient capital to support their business. You know, the all these entrepreneurs, they are very aggressive, ambitious to grow the environment sector because they are experts. They know how backward and they know the potential of the industry at that time. They know the urgency, they can feel the urgency. We can understand the eagerness. And also in this process, we learned a lot from the entrepreneurs. At that time, there was only a number of investors who were willing to meet them to visit the environment technology companies or operation companies. So we have plenty of time to discuss technology, business model, or most importantly, the policy trend, the government ambition, and the potential of this market. So we have a lot of time, multiple meetings. During this process, I think we understand each other. The firms, entrepreneurs understand. So why these guys are willing to do investment in these areas? Are they serious? And we also learn, pick up knowledge, become the market practice, and understand deeply the risks and also the return, also the needs of this environment companies. I think that areas at that time is a very memorable history. Even though right now 20 years passed, sometimes we still keep a regular contact with the entrepreneurs early years, and some of the companies are already very big and public companies. So the their chairman, CEOs, we still have phone calls. We meet over WeChat. Sometimes we meet when we travel. We just pick up a cup of tea. There's no business already. We are on different business tracks. They are so big, yeah. So it's very a good friendship during this that years of learn from each other, multiple meetings. Even though there was no business, we don't invest them.
Do you have any sort of case studies of or examples of companies where you engaged with very early on, learned from, maybe invested, and then they grew?
Yeah, I can share. So one thing we didn't invest. Okay, there's there's a public company in China in Chinese called Qianhe Environment Protection. The company is doing the air pollution testing. Okay, they have a special technology. The group of engineers originated from a state-owned research institute based in Hebei province. It's very close to my hometown. Okay, so we talk a lot of things, the tea, the hometown food, study, graduation, college, and of course environment pollution. Around 2005 and 2006, with the boom of the air pollution control, so the inspection and also monitoring is a must. So there was a boom, a strong demand for this equipment. So Xianhe was one of the companies, pioneers, which can do this at that time. They have a lot of demand. And but there, engineers are not very good at management and also to organize fundraising. And so a lot of investors, money lenders came to them. Okay. So I still remember, we talked a number of times. I visit that company, I invited the founder to meet me, Mr. Li, also Mr. Li. Mr. Li is also the chairman of this company. And I think the conversation was very good, but at that time we have only U.S. fund. Okay, we don't have money, RMB funds available. So other guys from the security companies, IB banks, or just some money lenders, just write a check to them. Okay, we don't need any DOD. We just give you a check. Give me your phone, your bank account details. I can just wire you 10,000 million. Okay, you can give me sign something, a receipt. That's okay. Yeah, we can talk later. Yeah, how to, what are the key terms, expectations. So it's also very, you know, that guy, Mr. Li, is also very nervous. How can I handle this? He asked me these questions. So I say, okay, yeah, it's good for you. That's recognition for the market, from the capital market. And but that time, we don't have RMB available. It's a PT. And we also signed a term sheet to lock, trying to lock some opportunity of if you want to raise another round. And in addition to this borrowing, and we are on the first priority, that's okay. But, you know, after that period of time, they started their IPO process. Well, it's a pity for our investment. But, you know, from personal aspect, we have a very good friendship. Regularly, we talk each other. I think it's I learned pick up quite a number of knowledge from him to learn the very infield the practical practice at that time from these companies, from the firms. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, that's a really great story, and how, you know, really in these early days of a new field, I mean, people working together and collaborating and becoming friends, and even if they don't become business partners, still, you know, everyone's really benefiting because knowledge is spreading. In describing the, you know, the investors that were really after Mr. Li, it sounded, you know, very informal and, you know, very casual almost. And I'm wondering, is that a reflection of the time period, it being sort of very early in venture investment in China, or is there still a lot of sort of more informal investment going on today?
I think there is still such phenomenon. I see a number of things from this phenomenon. So some firms like us, it's regulated. It's a very well organized. There's an internal control investment process and also compliance. We have three formal duty process. One is the so-called environment, the ESG audit. And of course, we have legal audit. We have the financial duty, of course. But some other firms, I think is maybe some individuals, wealthy individuals, or some privately owned companies, they strongly believe in somebody, some entrepreneurs. So their DOD process was more of based on the trust, based on their own judgment. They don't have to report to their internal compliance because it's individually, privately owned. There's only one boss. I think at that time, or even though right now, we have such, we came across such investors of such background. But that's also okay. But you know, for Team Capital, I think the things we pick up is we play professional. And we have to go through the necessary process, even though we have full trust, full positive judgment toward this specific investment. We have to go through this because we have a group of LPs, we have internal process requirements. And but the things we most cherish is we are theme investment. We cherish the sustainability, we cherish the clean tech, which is doing good doing well by doing good. And we have to follow the principles. And we also enjoy the communication, the process with the entrepreneurs. I think we respect each other. That's the play from Team Capital. Maybe sometimes it's a kind of opportunity loss because you cannot do very quick, very careful decision. But that's not our cup of tea. We play professional.
Right.
Game.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And I'm sure, I mean, I think given the size of the market, I think everything can sort itself out. I'm sure that the, depth of expertise that you bring actually, is an asset to a lot of companies. So a lot of companies might say, okay, it's a more rigorous, longer process, but actually in the end, we get, much more expertise from the VC. So I think there's probably pros and cons from the investor, from the company sides. I'd love to hear you mentioned, sort of obviously the core theme is clean tech. Are there any sort of segments within that you have particular specialties in?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So clean tech, I would say we're based in China, mainly focus on China originated companies, even though we can also do investment in Silicon Valley, in Canada, and also in Israel. And also we have an interest to look at deals from Europe. But of course, 80% of the company's portfolios, our interests are based from China. Look back the last 20 years. So when we started, there's only environment protection. We have to address the pollution issue and also to tackle the China's 5-year plan. I think maybe the 10th 5-year plan, 11th 5-year plan at that time. And that was a very ambitious plan, a vision from the government. And later on, we have the energy efficiency. And then around 2008, the renewable energy, including wind, solar, and also hydro, biomass, emerged and also growing very fast. And then I think it's around the 2010, we have energy storage and EV technology and also sector and from the electric battery, electric vehicles, and also I think even the hydro later on, hydro battery powering the vehicles. So smart technology later on. And within the different stage, there's we see different development, a new development of new sectors, subsectors. So our fund, the folks our fund, different funds are evolving. So currently we have 4 funds established. We are setting up the 5th fund under Team Capital Management. The first fund, second fund, quite close, 2002 and 2004, vintage years. So mainly based on the environment protection and also energy efficiency sectors. And then the third fund, vintage year 2007, actually literally 2008, its main theme of that fund is renewable energy. It's wind, solar, biomass, the most majority of portfolios. And then the fourth fund, so covers a wider range, including the smart technology, energy resources, smart technology and also energy storage. And also a main part is the EV technology. And within this fund, we deployed, invested in IoT and also the smart chips and artificial intelligence. So we see this is the right angle to address the sustainability issue, to achieve the sustainable development. So that's within the development of different sectors, different industries within this clean tech. So we just adjust the focus of our different funds. So that's a practical way because we have to, anyway, we have to see the return of the financial return of the funds because our fund, our LPs, even though they are, no matter it's financial offices, it's a long time old money from prestigious family offices or the multinationals, they have a very well-organized visions to support Ching Capital as a main hub to screen the technology in China, new technology, business opportunity, or the development banks. But anyway, they have a financial driven very seriously, very, it says there's a bottom line, okay, from them. We have to make sure it's successful, okay. But you know, it's a new bird to add one point. The theme investment, in addition to look for, to seek the financial returns, you have more of requirements from ESG. That means you have to bear additional resources, additional cost and expenses to do this, to implement, to the implement due diligence and also to implement your monitoring process after the investment in your portfolio management process. So even though sometimes to the portfolio companies, they have to spare some extra resources and expenses to do this. It's from this point, it's additional costs and expenses. But on the other hand, to address this, we try to mobilize the network, the experts, the resources we have from our LPs, from our expertise to help our portfolio companies. I can give you an example to elaborate on this. So we have a portfolio company which is doing the recycling the plastics, okay? And their product is to reuse this plastics to produce the fibers which can be used in products like the some bags, some umbrella, which is quite popular in some chain store market. For example, IKEA. Okay, IKEA likes their products. IKEA purchase products from their customers. That means our portfolio produce the main material, the raw material, and their direct customers produce the umbrellas, bags, plastic bags, which is very colorful. Okay, and IKEA has such mandate to promote carbon emission, to promote recycling. The theme, they like their products, okay, but they have a very strict ESG audit. They have audit their supplier, the suppliers of supplier. So when they do the audit, before that, we know this. So we introduced one of our resources, which is a ESG consulting firm. We have a long-term relationship with that firm, institution firm, consulting firm, help us to do the audit and also help our portfolio companies to do the regularly monitor their performance, ESG performance. So we help this company engage this consulting firm to streamline the internal process, to set up, actually they have the common practice, but they have to make it clear. They have to put it on the paper and to streamline that internal process, the internal regulations. And so after, upon the IKEA audit, that's easier and also more of convenient for the auditors. and they passed this audit from IKEA. So I think it's a kind of compliance when they do MNC companies doing their internal supply chain ESG audit. I think that's a very effective help this portfolio. It's not very big. Their annual revenue is only 500 million RMB. Compared with other IKEA suppliers, there's no very other advantages, but the ESG angle is a help for them. The successfully secure the deal, secure the long relationship. And also their entrepreneur and also one of our Team Capital's representative, also as a board member, were invited to attend IKEA's global meeting, supplier meeting, ESG, angle. I think it's quite recognition for this firm.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, I was thinking a bit about, you know, some of the government reasons why companies are getting more involved in this. But, you know, as, you know, I'm seeing here in the U.S., there is such pressure on companies now for ESG reporting, and this, and not just sort of like the scope one or two, you know, sort of their emissions, but, you know, what is known as the scope three emissions, which is actually, you know, through the supply chain. And so I can imagine, you know, IKEA is known as a really pioneer in that. I can imagine that in the coming years, there's going to be a lot more attention on those issues in supply chains. And so you guys seem to be, you know, very well suited for that. I want to ask you a little bit about the ESG measurement and management. It's interesting the way you portrayed it. You know, it's obviously a cost to the firm. I mean, you have to, you know, have processes in place. You have to collect data. I'm sure it's a very involved process for many of the firms. And then the sort of the main offset would be maybe networks, you know, that they can connect into some of these, you know, particularly through, you know, the networks that you developed. You probably know the investor Larry Fink in the United States, so the CEO and chair of BlackRock, who every year he's been writing these letters encouraging the companies that he invests in to be more sustainable, to report more on ESG. The way he describes it is very much that it's a long-term risk management tool and an indicator of good management quality. And he suggests that those reasons sort of offset the cost. I'm curious, you know, if you find that as well, that maybe, you know, the companies that you invest in because of going through this process, they're, I don't know, more resilient, you know, less prone to have big risks. I'm curious those benefits of the ESG management.
Yeah. And, you know, to China firms, Team Capital experience, I think is the ESG, I think it's three things. We see three things. Okay, during our practice to implement this and also to monitor this. Implementing this means doing the due diligence and investment. We have to push the entrepreneurs to write down paper and black and white in their LPA, in their SPA, shareholders agreement, these ESG schemes, this obligation to them. And then we have to take efforts to make sure it will be implemented and it will be monitored annually. Okay, but this is based on Team Capital's expenses. We hire the consulting firm to help them to go through this compliance, which is a screening of the potential risks. I think it's a benefit to the company, and the company should be happy to address to receive the consulting firm's visit, go through the details. It's helpful to them. And number three, it's value added, because the sustainability driven is a mandate from the governments of the world. We see, but you know, different stages, different progress from different continent, different companies. And China's maybe, we know China quite well. China's maybe more of a aggressive. President Xi just newly announced 2030 the carbon peak emission. Before that, we reached the peak of the carbon emission and 2060. So it's carbon neutrality. So I think it's quite aggressive. We have a lot of challenges, a lot of work to do, which is, you know, it's a good thing for the clean tech companies. Okay. And, you know, there will be very strong demand. It's a mandate. Mandate means a strong demand for clean tech products, clean tech services. So take the example I just said. So without the ESG angle, without the recycling products, they cannot go into this IKEA supply chain. It's a very reputable clients. It's not only talk about the price, talk about the expenses. They recognize your ESG efforts, your professional, your socially responsible efforts and expenditures. They just respect this expenditure. They give you this return for your ESG achievement. I think it's also for these clean tech companies or sustainably driven companies. It's we see more and more market for them, purely for this clean tech products and services. That's also very, very good for them. I think that's a value for firms, VC firms like us. We can bring this. We know this quite well. We know this. We are quite well connected with resources, and we can help them to go quickly into this ecosystem.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You talked a little bit about like some of the early companies and how you know the different sectors have matured. I'd love to hear a little bit about how the investors have changed over time. I think you mentioned initially it was like development banks, maybe family offices. You know, compared to early days, you know, when you got started to now, you know, what are some of the different trends in the types of investors and what their interests are?
I think it's quite obvious. Maybe two things. One is investors, LPs. So we see LPs, yeah, compared with VC as investors or fund as investors.
Right. Yeah. I mean the LPs. Yeah. Right.
The funds investors, LPs. LPs, there's maybe two groups. One group is they just talk about with a strong clean tech mandate. We have the development banks, ADB, IFC, FMO, EDC from Canada, and also the JBIC from Japan. Of course, China's national development banks, okay, and also multinational companies, family offices. They take an example. The development banks, they intend to identify some first time or second time team and fund to support in designated territories. For example, 10 years ago, they see China as one of their target territory to identify the right team, a fund to support them to have their first fund, second fund to do the ESG investment to promote this theme. And then they identify the Southeast Asia, Thailand, the Vietnam, Indonesia as their primary target territory to do this. And then Africa, they trying to do this, but it's not easy. But anyway, China is right now is not their primary target to do the fund investment to promote clean tech or sustainability. So that's one change. So for us, we have to push ourselves to go through this process to graduate from the primary stage, from the secondary school, and then to college, and then we will be able to face the more restrict challenges, financial challenges, or financial expectations, return expectations from a wider range of LP base. For example, the endowment fund, the typical financial institutions, you know, typical financial funnel fund or FOFs, they have definitely have a clear mandate to deploy a portion of their funds into the clean tech investment or sustainability investment. But they have a more of a strict financial return requirement. So we have to push ourselves to grow to a stronger stage, to a better stage. And then we can address their financial return expectations. That's the way we grow Qing Capital's fund investment, fund development. And you know, some of the funds are unable to grow themselves into the second stage. They can only face the ADB, IFC, the family offices, which have a clear, or which have a, only the ESG investment mandate. Maybe they are not able to face a more wider LP range because they are very picky on the financial return investment. You can do the ESG, you have ESG angle, that's good, it's a plus, but it's not enough, okay? You have to pass their financial return threshold, okay? So it's also, we have to grow ourselves, okay? Similar example, we can compare this process with some of our companies we see for the environment sector, okay? Some of the environment sectors, at first stage, their main revenue coming from garment procurement. It's a big market. It's the number one clients, it's government, local government. But gradually, they have to diversify their revenue into more of multiple business firms as their main clients. Otherwise, there will be risk, okay? They reach a stage, it's not easy for them to grow bigger. Yet we see such companies. There's a bottleneck for them. They have to go overthrow. For our fund investment, the same thing. Methodology. Okay.
Yeah, very interesting. Sort of, I have one sort of final question. It's sort of, you know, looking into the future a bit. I mean, it's, you know, the sector has been growing like crazy since you've been involved over the past 20 years. And there's indications that even the rate of growth may be even faster in the future, given you mentioned, you know, recent, you know, the President Xi and the 2060 carbon neutral, 2030 peak carbon. And I think even in the US and globally and in Europe, as, you know, investors and others are really wanting companies to report on their scope 3 emissions. And so that suggests through the supply chains, there'll be a lot of focus, you know, really suggests that we're just going to be, you know, this sector is going to be growing tremendously over in the coming decades. And you mentioned you're going to be, you know, having a fifth fund too. I'm curious, you know, as you think about your fifth fund and how the market may change, what are some of the key areas that you think that that will be really hot?
You know, there's two main drivers behind this sustainability or clean tech. Right now, we use more of sustainability. So one is a innovation. It's always innovation, technology innovation, and the other one is government and regulation. Okay, that's mandate. That's long term vision from big companies, from government leaders of the world. So the first one is innovation. It's I think it's quite familiar to VC firms, and also VCs are quite experienced to identify innovation areas or innovation opportunities. And we know how to identify, how to support, how to monitor, how to grow this innovation technology to a successful business model. That's no matter it's a sustainability VC or the general VCs, that's one area. We, of course, we have to keep a close eye on this. It's just innovation technology is a key factor behind all this map trend. And we are happy to see this innovation technologies behind the energy, behind the transportation, behind our smart city, behind the everything, okay, the smart homes. We see in these areas, we are no difference with the general VC fund, okay? Well, one of them. And the other one is the government regulation, okay? In many, many aspects of the sustainability, the environment, the social responsibility, responsible areas, the main driver is the policy and also the government regulation, which create the market demand. Either the government issue the check or they push the companies, big companies, to buy the services, okay? And in the two situations, they create the market, they are the buyers. Behind this, the main driving force is the regulation. So we are we have to take right of this trend. We, you know, if we do more aggressive, it's a little bit ahead of this government regulation, there will be a cost, there will be a loss for us. Our helpers will not be happy. So we have to be take the right time, the right opportunity. And there's a government promotion, there's a new regulation, the mandate is there, and the government also, big companies are looking for carbon emission, looking for opportunities, and then we have to make sure our companies, we have to identify such opportunities, which is just the right time to meet their demand. I think you can also say it's a opportunistic play behind the sustainability-driven investment. So we have to make sure we do successful investment, we do practical investment. We have to serve our LP and also the firm's investment. We invest it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure particularly, yeah, for your dollar-oriented funds, I mean, international investors, you know, to get your expertise, not just in clean tech, but also the nuanced understanding of the government regulations and how they're changing, you know, how different localities might have different programs. I mean, is a hugely valuable service that you provide that might be different than many other, you know, non-Chinese VC firms, for instance. So that's really interesting, Larry. Yeah. Thank you. Great. Well, just want to take a second to thank you so much for being on our show, China Corner Office. I really enjoyed learning about, you know, the evolution of the clean tech industry. I think particularly, you know, the ESG processes are tremendously valued both for the companies, you know, internal processes, but then also, as you mentioned, sort of being able to attract new and interesting clients. So I learned a lot. Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Chris. I also enjoyed this discussion with you about the ESG investment in China. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on China Corner Office. This podcast was produced and edited by Chris Marquis, Kaiser Guo, and Jason McRonald. Did you enjoy the show? If so, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know your thoughts. And don't forget to subscribe to the feed for alerts when new episodes are published. See you soon.